Produced by women about women, Powerful Women Let's Talk is a series of interviews with women who are trailblazers and have helped shape our world, transforming who we are and how we live. Powerful Women Let's Talk is made possible in part by Family Fair, keeping it real.
And welcome to this edition of Powerful Women Let's Talk. I'm Shelley Irwin. She celebrates 20 years at the podium of the West Michigan New Horizons Music Ensembles as music director. Her career journey includes directing, professing, and, well, don't forget, playing. Can you guess the instrument? In her spare time, she may be found performing aqua yoga and or making bread. Does she use the machine? Hello to you, Dr. Nancy Summers. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Shelley.
When did you pick up, all right, the oboe? And why an oboe?
Well, I didn't actually pick up the oboe first. This was a third instrument. I grew up in a family with two parents who were music majors, and so there were plenty of opportunities to hear music, recordings. I think probably the biggest piece of our furniture, the biggest piece in our living room was the Victrola, or whatever it was, Magnavox it was, huge cabinet and all this, and we listened to music a lot, but nothing really struck me until I was in first grade, and we had show and tell every Monday morning. One little girl in our class asked for the piano to come in, and they rolled it in, and she played Beethoven's Für Elise, and I simply was astounded. I remember how that felt to this day. I loved the piano, and I said to my mother that night, I have to have a piano. No, could you please, and all of that, but I have to have a piano.
Well, I'm going to ask if you got that piano.
I did.
Okay.
I did get the piano.
So was that your first instrument?
That was my first instrument. Absolutely loved it, but I have small hands, and so it was not a really good fit. I continued to play it, and I'm very glad for that background. But in school, the first thing we would do when we reached fourth grade was do a string instrument. I wasn't in love with that. But when I became a big fifth grader, I could choose another instrument. So my mother had been a flutist, so I chose the flute. And I was one of maybe 12 who chose the flute. So when we got to junior high, it was way too many flutes, way too many clarinets, and no oboe. And so the band director asked me if I would like to play the oboe. Not knowing that he had already asked my parents if they would consider it, and they said no. So he asked me, and I said, oh, I will, I can't wait. And it's been an ongoing love affair, truly, since then.
With the oboe. So here we are. I'm going to bring you to basically present day. There's been a journey from a player to a director, conductor, are those interchangeable?
Pretty much so.
Yeah, yeah.
Conductor would be someone who doesn't have the scope of a whole program necessarily over, you know, a period of time. So music directing means selecting rep and then rehearsing it and putting programs together. I have always loved conducting as well. My teachers have been very good at showing me what I would need to look for when I was sitting in the chair of being a player. And over the years of experience, I've watched the good and the really good and the not so clear and downright tyrannical people on the podium. So I learned a lot about what I could understand and what I wanted to be if I ever did that. I was given the opportunity in high school to do some conducting for the high school musical. So I just really have always had that in the background, never considered it to be a formal area. I was too busy practicing the oboe and playing and all of that.
But you have the highest degree now in this field, so something tug at you to the very end, I trust.
Yes. Mostly it was I was young and focused, single-minded. I wanted that terminal degree, as they call it. So, and I wanted it from one of the most excellent schools I could think of, and it was the University of Michigan. So I did that. I was lucky enough to get in and to study with some wonderful, wonderful people in both music history, music theory, and then my instrument too. So it was a journey. I was really determined, and I wanted to learn. So it was wonderful.
Wow. Then let's go back to present day. Who are you conducting?
I'm the only music director and conductor for West Michigan New Horizons Music Ensembles. I have been with them for 20 years. Makes me sad that we're not actually in the same space rehearsing every week. But
because of the pandemic.
Yes. But it's kind of interesting to me how I got that job. I was on the staff at St. Cecilia and on the board, I think. And the New Horizons band was meeting down there. Their director was going to be leaving. And so someone asked me if I would be interested in conducting this band. And I said, well, tell me a little bit about it. And I was told that they were adults over the age of 50. And I listened very politely. And I thought to myself, there's no way I'm going to work with a bunch of old people. I was 49 at the time.
Okay. Yeah, you hadn't crossed that 50 threshold yet,
right.
Had you? Yes.
Not at all. And so they, you know, the person who asked me, I said, no. But I'll think about it. Maybe I'll think of someone who could. So about 2 weeks later, I got another phone call from the same person. Well, have you considered it? And I said, well, yeah, but I really haven't come up with anybody. And tell you what, I'll come down and listen to a rehearsal. So I did. Went home. 2 weeks later, another phone call. Okay, well, let me come and look at your library. All right, I'll do this for 1 year. And so I committed to 1 year.
And we're, what, 20 years later, you say?
Mm-hmm.
I want to stay on the topic of this playing your oboe perhaps every day and the topic of just general discipline. Yes, for sure in this niche, but discipline as far as a road to success. What do you think?
Well, it is definitely something you have to have. You have to have the desire, and the discipline is not simple. There will be days, there are days, when it's the most difficult thing to do to get the reeds out, to get them soaking, to make myself do this. But if I don't do this disciplining, and if I don't do it now, I will lose what I have. They say that if you miss practicing for a day, you will know. If you miss practicing for 2 days, your audience knows. And I believe that is true. I think life circumstances can lend themselves to not practicing for a period of time. I know a number of people who have simply laid the instruments down during the pandemic because it seems to be almost a paralyzing kind of thing for those of us in the arts. What do we do? What are we going to do? How can we go on? And for people whose livelihood depends on playing, performing, it's actually more than that. It's more than just sustaining life and paying the bills. It's like our lives have suddenly become quiet. Our voices have gone silent. And that's difficult.
Yes. Teamwork, the ensemble, perhaps intermeshed with your leadership style. How do you bring all these instruments together as one? How do you lead?
I have to get off my podium.
Literally.
Literally get off the podium. I can't be a good leader if I am not right on the same level, understanding what the people need. I have sat in the chairs too many times and looking up at the podium to be able to tolerate that dictator type thing. I'm also way too old to be tolerating that.
Experienced.
Yes, experienced. Thank you very much.
Are you experienced enough to have found your own voice at this point, to own your own voice?
Yes. Yes, I have. I feel most comfortable in front of my people when we are alone. And then I think, but I'm also most comfortable when we're showing others what our passion is, what we do. It isn't something that I learned in the first year. It was something that gradually, a little help from my friends, one of the gentlemen who was a charter member in the band said to me, you need to talk more. You need to talk more. You're not telling the audience anything about the pieces. Okay. And there's nothing quite like standing in a darkened auditorium with an audience out there and people behind you on the stage waiting to play and show off what they can do for their friends and family and grandchildren and community supporters. And face that group and think, what am I going to say to them that will have meaning, that will bring them into what we do? We have friends, we have great supporters out there. How do I make this happen? And so finding my own voice was in part finding a way to relate to the audience. There's a large space between the stage and where the audience sits. When we do outreach programs and I can walk over and actually sit down in a chair and talk to the person next to me, say, how are you doing today? What would you like to hear us play? And they're so shocked that I would do that. But I literally had to come off of my podium before I could get on it to be effective.
And staying on the concept of building community relationships, I mean, you have to get an audience, A, to buy a ticket and come see, but to what, believe in your talents as well?
How does this yes. work? Yep. Yes, we see in our audience a mix of friends and family. The family members who've been listening to the practicing going on for weeks and weeks and months, they want to come and see the finished product. They want to experience what we come together and experience each week. That teamwork, it functions as a team. And there have been some beautiful moments in rehearsals where there's no one else listening to us. And I suddenly realize that the band is sitting there listening to two or three people trying to blend and play perfectly. And wild applause will break out at the end of that. And it was maybe four notes that they did in tune, but they worked so earnestly. We have a community of like-minded people. And that's a very beautiful thing.
Well, before I talk about aqua yoga and making bread without a machine, you are working with an audience that, continues to share their talents. I mean, you've probably, say one has not picked up their trumpet since they were 16 years old, and they're back at age 55. What's that like to see in your instrumentalists?
It's a beautiful thing. It's the thing that gets me up and makes me want to go to rehearsal. I feel in some ways that this is a calling that I didn't even know I had until the door was opened for me to try it. So the passion that we have as we come together, it's an amazing thing. But to watch someone pick up that instrument, we have really three levels of people. We have beginners who have not played an instrument before. Perhaps they didn't have time. Their resources in a family setting did not allow for an instrument. For whatever reason, they've said, okay, this is my time now. So I have beginners. And then we have people who've played all their lives and want to play in something that's a little different. Then we have the people who the horn's been in the closet for 35 years because they were busy with a life, a job, career, families. We come to it from all of these walks of life, and it's the perfect molding of all the talents and the desires. So we see that gleam in the eye, and I can look around and see the smiles and just the sheer happiness that
looking up at Dr. Nancy Summers. All right, time to have some fun with you. Now, aqua yoga today, but college competition as a swimmer, you can never lose that title. So you like the water.
I love the water. Water is so soothing. It's so peaceful. It's so serene. And I didn't actually set out to be a swimmer per se in a competitive way. I was in undergraduate school. I went to a small school, and I was part of the professional fraternity for women in music. And we have, of course, had to be showing what we could do in the aquatic line. So I was pretty certain that I wouldn't drown, so they entered me into the competitive field. I came in second, well-earned. I loved it. And then, you know, that was the end of my competitive swimming.
Well, there you go. Kneading bread, what's this all about?
Oh, my goodness. You said bread machine.
Yes.
I'm sorry, but bread machine, no.
Not in the Summers household?
No. This is down to the earthiness of life. When the yeast begins to form and the dough, the laying it out, I just did this a couple days ago, so it's fresh. And just the feeling it and feeling the elasticity come into the dough, creating that, molding it, taking it from one source, one feel to another, and then knowing it's ready to rise.
Nancy Summers therapy. All right, quick responses to these. On a whim, you biked in the south of France?
Yes, ma'am.
What was that like? Yeah.
Larry and I have a very close friend who's also in music, and she said, I want to bike in the south of France. Are you guys up for this? And I said, yeah, why not? And so we did. The three of us hopped on a plane and went to France, and we each had backpacks. And we had a book, Cycling the Waterways of France. So we flew in to Paris and got a TVG to Toulouse, and we biked, rented the bikes the next day, and we did 160 miles in 4 days. We took one day in the middle off because it was rainy weather. Backpacks, that was it.
Adventure. What about adopting a 14-year-old rescue spaniel? Speaking of giving second chances, you did this.
Yes. We had had dogs and had lost our oldest dog. It was going to be winter. It was winter, and winters can be very solemn and lonely. I just felt some kind of calling to start looking around to see if there was there was a dog to adopt. And I came across a story that I really loved and met a lifelong friend now through this adoption. She was adopting rescue Cocker Spaniels. So I called her and talked with her, and she met us at a PetSmart over on the other side of the state. And we brought home this beautiful, sweet, blind and deaf and special needs boy. She had several other dogs in her home, so he got the total attention from us, and he really did need a lot of attention. But that is the only dog that I would scale an 8-foot fence for.
Oh.
He crawled in between, and there was an open slat, and he got in there, and there was no way I could get in. And so I scaled this fence and jumped down into a bank of snow to get him. And then I pretty much carried him the whole way home. That was an interesting situation. We had him for 9 months before he passed gently and very quickly. So that was a beautiful way for him to end.
Yes, the whole world knows now about that story. Lastly, would you drop some names of those who you have rubbed elbows with on stage, including Carol Channing?
Yes, ma'am. Carol Channing, Phyllis Diller, Don Ameche. Oh, yes, I was standing in line at the concession stand, and Don Ameche was standing right in front of me waiting to order. And he turned around, and he looked at me for a second, and he said, "You're in the orchestra." And I said, "Yes, I am." And he said, "You have such a lovely smile." Oh, my gosh. My heart just kind of, what a nice thing to say. They're human people. They're just so lovely. Yul Brynner, we were told we would address him as Mr. Brynner when he came to the rehearsal for 5 weeks of King and I, and he came in a black suit, black turtleneck, and sat on a stool and rehearsed with the orchestra. Just a pure gentleman, thoroughly enjoyed him. We've had some people who are full of themselves, very egotistical, which you can imagine. One that I thoroughly enjoyed was Dorothy Hamill. We did her show, Dorothy Hamill on Ice, and that is a feat.
When you say you did her show, you were part of the orchestra.
Part of the orchestra, yes. They came into this huge theater, 10,500 seats, outdoors, and created an ice rink on the stage. So we did 7 nights of Dorothy Hamill. She was lovely and gracious and so beautiful and so athletic. And we had lovely music to play for her show. But Mikhail Baryshnikov, oh my goodness.
That's the one that...
I would go out and watch him warm up at the bar backstage every night. And I am not kidding you, that was a dream come true. Artistic, beautiful man, beautiful experience.
Wonderful memories. Do you have a book recommendation for us?
I do. When you ask me about a book, one that came back to me repeatedly, and I read it probably every other year, it's called Two Old Women. It's by Velma Wallace, I should say. It's an Alaskan legend of betrayal, courage, and survival. In that they refer to the tribe as the people. And the two women who were older were told at the beginning of a harsh winter that they were not doing their part. They were sitting around complaining, and their joints were aching, and they were really taking away from the community of the tribe, the people. So what the tribe, the elders, did was they left them. They said, you will no longer be in our community, and we are moving on. And so there they were. We are like babies. The older woman looked up in surprise at such an admission. We're like helpless babies. So what are we going to do? Well, we are not going to let ourselves just die. We are going to get up and we are going to make something. We are going to move. We are going to die trying. And they didn't die. In fact, they flourished. And this story takes us through the journey of what they did. What they did to shore up and the hardships that they endured, proving once again that you can make it back. And they did. However, the people who had left them were not so fortunate. They came to the old women, they came across them, and the old women had plenty of food to eat, they had shelter, they had done very, very well. And one by one, the elders of the tribe came to realize that their only hope of saving the tribe was to take these women in and give them their undying love and support and affection. It's a remarkable story. Betrayal, yes, absolutely. The courage, yes. And then the forgiveness. It's about survival and suspense and wisdom.
Thank you for your wisdom, your time, Dr. Nancy Summers.
Thank you so much, Shelley.
Thank you for joining us. That does it for this edition of Powerful Women, Let's Talk. I'm Shelley Irwin.
Produced by women, about women. These powerful podcasts focus on powerful women and how their strength transforms who we are and how we live. Want to hear more Powerful Women, Let's Talk? Get additional interviews at WGVU.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Please rate and subscribe. Powerful Women, Let's Talk is made possible in part by Family Fair, keeping it real. It is produced by WGVU at the Meyer Public Broadcast Center at Grand Valley State University. The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of WGVU, its underwriters, or Grand Valley State University.